You're Smarter Than Us is a proud member of the Soccer and Sweet Tea Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Check out all of the coverage of Soccer in the Carolinas at soccer, the letter N, sweettea.com.
You're listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, Asheville's premier soccer podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of You're Smarter Than Us. Tim here, and I've got with me Jim Hicks, the Chattagooner of the 423 soccer podcast over there in Chattanooga. How you doing, Jim? Welcome back.
Yeah, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I'm excited to be chatting with you. And I'm excited to be chatting with you specifically because Chattanooga season has recently wrapped up. If everybody remembers, Chattanooga at the end of their NPSL Classic summer season, they lost 2-0 to Miami, eventual NPSL champions, Miami FC in Miami after they had defeated Asheville 12-0 or something like that in the Southeast Championship game. Moved on to the Zombie Founders Cup competition, which was renamed the Members Cup. And that was was it 5 or 6 teams, Jim?
It was 6 teams total. So we played 5 home and away, 10 matches total.
All right. So, and for the first time in Chattanooga FC's existence, they were playing meaningful fall games. So Jim, how did you feel like Chattanooga's fall season went?
Well, first off, it's just more soccer. So, you know, everybody loves more soccer. That's what I hear. So that was certainly cool to have those games. It rained. We had 5 home matches. I think 3 of them were significant rain events. One was a 2-hour lightning delay game against the Michigan Stars. The other 2 were significantly rain. I mean, it was a significant amount of rain, and it dampened, I think, attendance at those 3 matches. And so attendance-wise, it was a little shaky. Performance-wise, you know, if you look at... as you know, I like charts and numbers and to watch matches and do all that kind of stuff. So from a performance perspective, if you just looked at that, I think the team played pretty well for a majority of the matches. I think the away game to the Cosmos, we did not play particularly well. And the home match against Detroit was another game that I think we played okay in the first half, but really didn't play that great in the second half. So the performances overall, I think, were fairly good. We could maintain possession, we created chances, but we just couldn't finish those chances for whatever reason. And so the outcomes of the matches, you know, we start off with probably the 2 toughest matches that we knew we would have, and that was home to Cosmos. Well, not, I guess not to the away Cosmos game would be worse, but Cosmos at home and then away to Detroit were 2 of the tougher matches, and we lost both of those. You know, and after the away match to Detroit, well, I was in the hospital during that game, so I didn't see it. But after I've gotten to review it, and I got to talk about it with Todd and others. You know, we really felt like we didn't deserve no points. You know, we didn't deserve 0 points for those 2 matches. And in a cup competition, it's not really a cup competition, but a competition with only 10 matches. You know, you lose your first 2 and you know, I think the writing was on the wall. And then we come home and play the Stars, a team that we really did dominate and created a bunch of chances and a bunch of good chances. And, you know, they nick an early goal. We have 2 1-hour lightning delays. You know, the match goes really late. There's nobody there. We do get an equalizer, and we should have gone on to take the 3 points, but we just didn't. And so after 3 matches, you had 1 point. You know, I think the writing was on the wall in terms of the Members' Cup, but the guys continued to play really well. And, you know, from a performance standpoint, we still had some outcomes that were shaky. But all in all, I think that the team played pretty well, and we can be happy at least that we ended the season with a good, probably the best all-around performance we had. you know, against a solid team. No offense to Napa. I love what they do. We've talked with Eric and I love what Napa is and what they're doing out there. But those two matches just were not competitive. And so of the other competitive matches, the last match we played against the Torrent was probably our best and put together a 2-0 win. So all in all, you know, I can be frustrated. I can be, you know, I can go back and pick, and I have gone back and kind of cherry pick things, but you know, it was good to play. It was also good to mix in those two friendlies with Stumptown to get a little sense of what NISA competition would be like. And you know, it was cool. And when it ended, you still had the same problem, you know, same feeling of, well, you know, that, you know, we didn't want it to end. And so, you know, it was fun and looking really forward to kind of fall soccer going forward in Chattanooga.
How did you feel that the community and the city wrap their arms around fall soccer?
You know, it's hard to say, and I have been disappointed. I, you know, going to those matches and seeing the numbers, and you know, I found, you know, I went and asked kind of what our official attendance was, and it wasn't great for those five home matches. The Cosmos match was okay. I think it was around 3,000, and then it slowly kind of trickled, but it's what's difficult to measure is that the weather was so bad. Now we're in the middle of a drought, but it rained virtually every home match, and not just a light drizzle. Like it was just a miserable cold rain. And so it drove numbers way down. And so I think that there's no way to really assess the fall schedule without kind of a big asterisk. You know, it's really hard to measure. So, you know, people were talking about it. I think the membership drive, the supporter owner member, you know, drive helped kind of, keep CFC in the news, I guess you would say, but it was tricky from an attendance standpoint. Now we still outdrew some other clubs in the area, but I was disappointed by it. I know the club was disappointed, but I think they were more disappointed in the fact that we just don't have a good sense. We didn't get good data, I guess, if you want to put it that way, because the variables of weather and other stuff were just all over the place and really couldn't give us a good idea of where we stood.
So in a way, though, that kind of means you're starting. Of course, it would have been amazing to have that information, but in a way, I guess it would be a good thing that you got the opportunity to practice your logistics. I know you guys had to basically alternate with the UTC football home games. So you were able to practice that. You were able to get that extra merch out. You were able to, and even on some games, did you and the Red Wolves have any games that were on the same day? I don't think you actually did you?
Yeah, we did. We had a couple, and, you know, I should... I don't know that I've got my stats for attendance on this. I do on my laptop. So we had, I'm looking here, we had one, two, it looks like maybe three or four matches on the same day. One, okay. Two, three, four matches on that, oh, five, excuse me, that overlapped and were on the same day. So... yeah, so we had some head-to-head numbers. Their first match of the year was our Detroit City
friendly.
Friendly.
I was over there for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I don't know who we played, but the one of the matches that we played on the same day was, it must have been one of our international friendlies, because the attendance was over 6,000. So that was one of the South American teams or Central American teams, I think, that we played. We had a couple of several matches, actually. When you look at it, like five is not an insignificant number. So we had five matches on where we directly competed head to head.
Do you think there was any actual attrition between the two? Do you think, I know leading up to the season, there was a lot of debate about split fan bases. If you just look at their actual numbers, though, and obviously they blew some of the numbers up and it was tickets distributed as opposed to people through the turnstile. But I mean, they even, what was one of their announced attendances, like 200 people, 112 or something ridiculous?
Yeah,
like
235 is the one I think a lot of people that kind of raised eyebrows. Mm-hmm. That was September 28th. Yeah, that was the one, I think, where because they were trucking along at, you know, 1,500, 1,600 or 1,100 around there for at least announced attendance. Mm-hmm. And then it just dropped off to that 235 number. And I think it raised some eyebrows and, you know, got some chuckles. And we've had our own attendance issues with the fall. So, I'm not here to throw shade or anything. But, their last two matches, one was 235 announced, and the last match was 512. And actually, I think a lot of people reacted more to that 512 number than the 235, because that 512 match was a match they needed a result to get to the playoffs, and they did not get the result they needed, and Forward went on to take that spot. Mm-hmm. So
do you think there was an actual divided community attention to both these games? Like, did they take CFC fans, or were those individuals who were never going to be CFC fans anyways, and they purposely were kind of waiting for an alternative, and vice versa? Do you think CFC fans were actually going to the Red Wolves games to, you know, that the, you know, I know in Greenville there was a lot of people at the beginning of the NPSL and Triumph seasons that said, I'm going to support both. And when rubber met the road, there weren't a whole lot of people that actually ended up doing that. The ones who went to the Greenville FC games actually did kind of go to both. They definitely went to all of the Greenville FC games. But a lot of those Triumph fans that said they were going to do... Now, there were some. Absolutely, there were some. But just, you know, kind of like some of us predicted, they ended up going to watch parties when Triumph were on the road instead of the Greenville FC games. So was there any of that?
So I think for me and the people that I am around most, it's easiest for me to look at academy parents and prior academy parents and current academy parents, because that's, you know, those are a lot of the fans that I know, I know better, it being kind of a having two boys go through the CFC academy. And, you know, the other thing that kind of split in all of this is the academy. And, you know, my son's team split in half, maybe more than half left and went to the Red Wolves. And a lot of players went to the Red Wolves. Now, I think the academy is very happy with the number of players that stayed and the number of players that they were able to recruit. But in terms of my sphere, there were several people that their kids went and started playing in that Red Wolves Academy. And I would still see them at CFC matches. So I don't, you know, I do know of a handful of people who told me that they had season tickets at both. I don't think there's many. I just think that's probably the people that do that are the Academy people, that mm-hmm. where they may be CFC fans, but their kid is playing for the Red Wolves Academy. So they felt some type of allegiance to go to see the senior team, and or maybe their son wanted to see the senior team play because the players are, you know, helping with the Academy. And so I know that there's some of that. But, you know, outside of those, that handful of people, the people I know who are CFC fans are CFC fans. And the handful of people I know who are Red Wolves fans, they go to Red Wolves matches. I know that there are people who used to be CFC fans who go to Red Wolves matches. You know, a couple of them have a podcast that, you know, that covers the Red Wolves. So I know that demographic exists. And I do think there's some anecdotal evidence to suggest, just looking at the numbers, if you were to go back and look at historical CFC attendance and then add up the numbers between current CFC attendance and current Red Wolves attendance, you know, the numbers look kind of funny, even though, you know, maybe our numbers in the past were a little fuzzy and Red Wolves numbers now are a little fuzzy. They look a lot alike. And so it's hard for me to think that that's a coincidence. And so I do think some of that has happened. I think CFC, at least I am, when I finally laid down the numbers beside each other for most of the season, our attendance, we outdrew them. We outdrew them every time that we kind of went head to head, and most in our attendance really stayed ahead of theirs for most of the season. So I'm pretty happy with that. They of course attribute that to the fact that they don't have their stadium yet, and the stadium situation where they're playing at the Chattanooga Christian School wasn't great. And mm-hmm. they, you know, I think I've heard them say, more time. I've heard some people say that they're just waiting for that stadium to be built and they expect it to flip. And who knows? It might. So that's a long way to answer your question. Yes, I do think there has been some split of fans for one reason or the other. Maybe it's partially academy. Maybe it's partially, you know, because I don't know how many people are like Adam, who is the host of the Soccer Chat podcast that covers Red Wolves, who said that he just didn't like the way CFC reacted to the Red Wolves coming and chose to be a Red Wolves fan. And so, you know, I don't know how many of those folks there are.
So you guys wrapped up. You finished third in the table for the Members' Cup. Detroit won, Cosmos came in second, you guys came in third. I forget how the rest of the table kind of filtered out. And then kind of across the way, you mentioned earlier how there was also this NISA showcase that's going on, and I believe it's actually still going on. There's two championship games that are going to be played next weekend. And yeah. One of the two competitors, well, I guess both the competitors on the Eastern side of the showcase, Miami FC and Stumptown, you guys kind of intimately know, obviously, because you played Miami FC in the NPSL Classic playoffs, and then you had that home and away dual friendly with Stumptown. What was your impression of your short limited exposure to NISA, a series of teams that you're going to end up becoming intimately aware of come the spring?
Yeah, so I'll preface this my reaction to the Stumptown matches by saying I just don't really put that much in friendlies. I just really don't. So, you know, I go back to the fact that we scored first against Real Betis and put in a really good performance and lost 4-3. And you're thinking that's a La Liga team and we play really well. And then the next match we lose to the Georgia Revolution. So I just don't put a lot into friendlies. We had a lot of squad rotation. And when we talked to Coach Fuller, I believe it was after the home Stumptown match, when Todd talked to him, I couldn't make it. I was doing dad duty with the academy. You know, he specifically mentioned that there were guys who they were looking at for spring spots. And so that these were kind of, they trotted out some folks that they wanted to see some things to see if they were going to be here in the spring. So the coaching staff treated them really as runouts for some players and really, you know, kind of live game tryouts for certain players. And we changed formations, were a little different. Personnel was very different. I don't know. I watched some Stumptown. I watched them earlier before, but I did not pay attention to their lineups and go in and kind of chart it out. So I have no idea if they started anything close to what they would consider to be their first 11. The matches were entertaining. The first match probably more so than the second. You know, they were entertaining. They were, it was decent soccer it's what I've come to expect from playing teams like Detroit and like Miami and you know, maybe like the Cosmos. So the higher end of the NPSL. But it's really hard for me to just judge. You know, I've watched several NISA matches, the West Coast matches between, you know, the Strikers and LA Force and Oakland and who am I missing? Oakland. Diego. Oh, 1904.
Yes.
Yeah, so, So I've watched them and they're entertaining match. I mean, they're fun to watch. I mean, and it's not terrible soccer for this level. I mean, you know, I'm not going to compare it to, you know, the EPL or La Liga or anything like that, but it's for Division III. You know, I've only watched a couple of USL League One games. So I'm not going to compare it cause I really can't, but, you know, they've been fun to watch. And so I'm excited about it. I'm excited about Oakland coming to Chattanooga. I'm excited about teams like, you know, the Cal United. 1904, I don't understand them yet. And LA Force, I don't get at all. But, you know, and then you've got teams like Atlanta, which are real kind of an enigma. And then you have Detroit and Miami and now New York that we heard. Well, assuming that they make it through the rest of the approval process, New York. So Stumptown was fine. I mean, I think they were fun matches. It's just hard for me to really put too much into them. You know, I mean, because if I were to just judge them, I would say for both matches, we dominated, we controlled them, we created a lot more chances, but we gave up silly counters. And if anybody on this podcast has listened to me at all on the 423 Soccer Pod, then they've heard me say that over and over and over again. It's the same. It was the same story. You know, we do create a lot, couldn't finish, and then let in some silly goals.
You guys were even doing that during the NPSL Classic season. I know.
Oh, heck yeah. Greenville. Yeah. I mean, if I were to choose one podcast to tell somebody to go back and listen to how I feel about the NPSL season, go back and listen to the away Greenville post-match rant when we lost 3-1. That is a microcosm of our entire season.
So to kind of wrap all of this up, as obviously anybody who's listening to this knows, Asheville has gone on and we are now a USL League Two team. Chattanooga, who was kind of our the godfather NPSL team that when Asheville came in, we kind of looked to, and you guys opened up your books and were very kind to us and helped our ownership kind of come up off the ground and not make the same mistakes that Chattanooga had made. And, even the suggestion of our season ticket kits came from Chattanooga. And now we've both kind of, diverged in a wood, and you guys are going on to NISA and we've left. What do you foresee as the future of the NPSL Southeast? Is there hope for it?
I really don't know. I would have said, like a week ago, I would have said no. I would have probably laughed and said no. I was really worried about anybody who was a fan of Greenville or what they were going to do, unless, it was just like, well, they're going to be, I don't even know if they can't even do League One without special permission. They could do League Two, maybe. But they would still have to get some type of permission from Greenville, the Triumph. So, I really don't know what to think of it. And then this North Alabama Soccer Coalition, which is a wonderfully strange name, came into being. And I think they had a women's team. It seems like I read that somewhere. I haven't really followed. Unfortunately, we don't have one. So I haven't really followed like the lower women's team. So I was glad to hear that. I think along with anybody who kind of follows around on Twitter and reads Protagonist once in a while, know that there's some stuff between the GCPL and the NPSL in the Deep South, which would be more of kind of a gulf. It was probably still too far for a team like Huntsville, or especially a team like Greenville. So I can only assume that if Huntsville was in the works, that maybe they've got some others. I hope they do. You and I have said multiple times that neither of us understands why there's not something in Knoxville. I just do not understand that at all. It's not great. So, I certainly hope that they find some teams. I would really like for there to be a Southeastern Conference for a couple of years, so that when we hopefully get our feet and kind of work our way into, being a little more comfortable with where we are in NISA, that we could field the team, like a reserve team or U23 team in the NPSL and kind of get back into that game. Cause we owe a lot to NPSL, and I would like to see us pay a little bit of that back in making sure that league had a presence, in the Southeast.
I think that makes all the sort of sense in the world for you guys, especially if a U23 CFC team doesn't have to play a Finley. So you're not necessarily right. Opening up that sort of infrastructure and staff and merch for, a U23 team. But clearly you guys had several friendlies at high schools in the area this past year for some of your non-league friendlies, and that seemed to go pretty well. You guys still drew over 1,000 people, which would have put you, technically, I guess, third this past year behind yourselves and us in the NPSL Southeast. So I definitely think it's doable. I'm fascinated, and I know we've kind of gone back and forth on this matter about why, and I mentioned it on my last podcast, that why NPSL, when they had positioned themselves at, almost kind of neck and neck with USL League Two for summer league amateur ball, relying upon college players and, other sort of assorted amateurs, potentially people who had graduated college and just, graduated school and needed a season to kind of showcase themselves and showcase their talents before they could potentially get picked up by League One, Championship, something overseas, something. why the NPSL decided to, of all things, when they're in this neck and neck battle with League Two, pivot away from becoming the best they possibly could be at that. And they pivoted towards a year-round schedule. And not just a year-round schedule, but a split spring-fall league that also contains a summer league in the middle. And anybody who participates in that spring-fall also has to field a summer team. But the spring-fall season has nothing to do with the summer season. So there's a three-month break. You can't use college players in either the spring or fall, but you can during the summer. So do you turn your entire roster over? Do you have any idea what maybe they were thinking? Was the only thing I can truly think of is that this was something that years ago, maybe 2-3 years ago, Detroit and Chattanooga were screaming at the top of their lungs for. They had the resources, they had the fans, and basically what they needed were more games. They needed more games to put that infrastructure in and to build up the knowledge and the know-how of how to run a year-long schedule. And they didn't get it. And maybe that's what eventually NPSL Pro was supposed to be, but they couldn't figure it out. And so in an attempt not to lose the next Chattanooga, not to lose the next Detroit, whether that be Kingston or Cleveland or, you know, whatever teams are going to fill that void that Chattanooga and Detroit left, now they've got this option. I know a report just came out that the Milwaukee Torrent are already looking to go pro, but they see as a step in between this and that pro move, whether it be League One, which I don't think is actually possible, or actually, I guess it was maybe even Championship or something like that. No, it was League One, or NISA. The extended season is their best bet, you know, in an attempt to build that out. So, Jim, why do you think the NPSL decided to pivot in this direction?
Well, again, like you said, I think it can only be what you're talking about, that there's a group of teams, that clubs that have told them maybe that they want more games, their fans are ready for more games. They don't know if, you know, they don't have, whether it's PLS or for other reasons, they're not ready with the infrastructure to go to make the leap to Division 3. But they, you know, they want something. There is nothing else really for that. And so, you know, I guess UPSL in some way, some of the regional leagues kind of do some year-round stuff, but this is a little different. So I can only think, you know, you saying that they're of two minds is probably fair, because I think they've gotten that feedback from at least some clubs that they want to do that. But they also, I think, have something in the back of their mind saying, wait a minute, you wanted to be the best summer league in the country. Do not forget where you come from.
Mm-hmm.
And they're probably split a little bit. And what's interesting is they felt the need to require summer participation. That's intriguing to me. Like, they did not just go ahead and say, no, we're going to split. There's NPSL Classic. There's NPSL whatever, Premier, whatever crazy soccer term you want to use. and split them up into two different leagues and have teams that only do summer, and we can focus our summer infrastructure on just that group, and then there's this other group that's going to go full season. I mean, it's almost as if they feared that if they did a full season and didn't require it, that everybody would leave. And that move makes me think they're worried about not having teams for the summer. But on the flip side, I know you and I both know that there are a lot of NPSL teams that do not have aspirations to go full season or go pro.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't know. I mean, I'm not in anybody's head. I can't. I'm certainly not in Kenny Farrell's head. And I don't want to. No, I don't think any of us want to be in there. So, I really don't know. I hope that what they heard was that this was an intentional, strategic decision based on feedback that they received from member clubs, a significant number of member clubs, that they needed this in order to facilitate a move to the next level of soccer club, professional or whatever. That they felt pressure, not just pressure from CFC and DCFC 3 years ago, but they felt imminent pressure from clubs that they needed that and they wanted it now. And so they felt like they had to do it. And they still wanted to anchor their summer league, so they're going to require them to to participate in that too. That's the best I can come up with, but I really don't know. I'm really worried about it. The more that you've talked about it and being of two minds and split mind, you know, a divided house cannot stand. So, it's interesting to see. And I really would have liked to have seen more clubs come out and talk about the full season than have so far. But I don't know their timeline. So, you know, I really don't know what they're thinking about or when they need to know that. But I would guess if it's spring ball, then it needs to be pretty damn quick.
It's so funny you mentioned that, because one of the, you know, eventual questions I was going to ask is, when do you expect to know anything about NISA's spring season? obviously, if the NPSL is going to play a season that kind of mirrors that, news eventually has to come out from that. And this goes back, I was about to ask, do you foresee any opportunity for collaboration between the NPSL and NISA? Because they definitely do, they seem theoretically of like mind, and obviously there's been now three or four clubs that have specifically moved from NPSL directly into NISA. Cosmos may make five. Four or five. I'm not exactly sure what those numbers look like, but this is still all operating outside of the USL kind of cabal of, you know, lower leagues, where the USL and MLS obviously have a collaboration going on. And we'll put our personal thoughts aside about that for a second.
No, come on.
But one of the major complaints, and I know you mentioned it in the Slack channel the other day, was how, you know, a lot of people tend to pile on NISA. And in the past, within that same Slack channel, people would pile on the NPSL. And this was obviously always in comparison to the professionalism of the PR campaign of the USL. Now, the USL obviously has this extremely long runway of, you know, New Rock Holdings bought them in 2009 from Nike, and that's kind of when they officially took off, and that's when USL Pro was around, and that's morphed. And obviously, just as I mentioned in my last podcast, you know, the only consistent thing in lower league soccer is inconsistency. So whatever lower league soccer looks like in 2022 is not what it looks like in 2019. Things are going to move fast. They're going to change quickly. But the one thing that I think sports fans, not specifically soccer fans, but sports fans in general, and specifically in America, want is a polished product. Not necessarily on the pitch, not necessarily, they're not going to be comparing, you know, NISA to League One and, you know, this XG to that XG and saves per, you know, I think all of that's for, you know, some charts and graphs and, you know, nerds that, and I say that lovingly, that may be able
seen.
To manifest those things and really compare quality on the pitch. Most soccer fans just want to be told, they want to be spoon-fed, you know, what the table looks like on a Wednesday before an important game on a Saturday. They want to see quick little polished-looking graphic designs of, you know, the head-to-head matchup or the save of the week or the goal of the week. And they don't want to go looking for it. You know, it's 2019. Everybody wants things brought to their doorstep. And this is something that NPSL has struggled with greatly. I mean, I don't understand why they can't do social media well. And NISA, for whatever reason, you know, for a while when Bob Watkins was out there as the commissioner, he was trying to, you know, nothing had been announced. And when Jason Bailey with the Second Yellow Pod interviewed him when they were having their commissioners meeting, annual whatever in Charlotte, and interviewed him, he said it's not the league's place to announce things for the clubs. Part of what NISA is and our philosophy is that clubs themselves will promote themselves. Okay, that's wonderful and that's amazing. But a league that's starting up needs a little bit of central public relations. They need a little bit of getting up off the ground and explaining why we need to care about Stumptown and Atlanta SC. The last thing we need is Atlanta SC coming out with, a graphic that more or less looks like it was made on Microsoft Paint, and Stumptown coming out with this confusing, we have a nickname that's actually Portland, Oregon's nickname, but also Matthews, North Carolina, but we're going to reveal the team in Ballantyne, but we're going to play half our games in Pineville, but we're not Charlotte, we're actually Matthews, whose nickname is Stumptown. You know, there's this almost like they can't get out of their own way. Now, all of that was a long ways to say, how do you think, you know, now that CFC is, you're in it, and you do these things extremely well, Detroit does these things extremely well. If the Cosmos get in, they like to think they do these things well, but you know, the fans are just kind of loud, all like 15 of them, and they make a lot of noise. But how do you feel taking part in, you know, having left a league that has these kind of PR issues, going into a league that's burgeoning, but it also is already kind of exhibiting some of these same challenges?
I mean, it's frustrating as hell. I mean, to be honest, it is. And because I talk, I said on the Slack, you know, that there's a lot of piling on, but it's not unwarranted. I mean, it's not really necessarily unfair. And that's partially what frustrates me the most, it's just so unnecessary. It's not, you know, we don't have to be social media savants. You just have to do the basics. And that's a little frustrating. Now, I know from talking with some folks at CFC that there are talks about, you know, some of those things that you mentioned in terms of, you know, the stats that pop up. I mean, USL, you know, their website's nice. I can go look at heat maps and XG and individual stats, and I can do all that. And it's located in one kind of game center for each game. And they are aware that they need those things. And I know that they're talking with some people who maybe could provide some of that. So I think the people are aware of it, or maybe Detroit and Chattanooga and Oakland, you know, and maybe other clubs are making them more aware. But you don't know that because you don't hear a lot. And you have this at NISA League account, and then you have this at NISA Nation account, which we're still not really sure what the formal relationship between those two is. I mean, it's NISA Nation seems to talk for the league in some ways, but they're not. So I don't know. You know, it's just really frustrating. It doesn't really make me feel great about the league, but it's, you know, I've got to be a fan because it's really the only place that a club like Chattanooga can go. And so, you know, I'm here and will do whatever I can to sing the praises and try to clean up and make sure that at least what we do from Chattanooga's standpoint looks good. And we could be an example for, for some of the other clubs. Like Detroit doesn't need us as an example. Oakland really doesn't need us as an example. You know, I've been reasonably pleased with with the Strikers and so some of the clubs are doing okay. And then you've got a couple that, you know, Stumptown is interesting. They have a brand, they have a bit of a brand, like it makes you kind of question what they were thinking with the brand, but they are not the dumpster fire that Atlanta SC is from a marketing standpoint. They're just confusing. It's a little bit of a mess, but I really don't know what anybody would have expected. You know, really, considering the philosophy, like you mentioned, because, you know, I do kind of understand and agree that it's not a league's responsibility to boilerplate every PR release. That, you know, I get that's what fans in the U.S. are accustomed to, but I, sitting in my house in Chattanooga, I don't really need that. But, you know, I'm not a NISA fan, contrary to maybe what some on Slack might think. You know, I'm a CFC fan, and right now the only place we have to be is NISA, and so I hope for the best. But, you know, I'm not stupid, and I'm not naive, and, you know, I can see the problems that people are pointing out. And I can only hope that, you know, that some of those things get ironed out as you know, the people in Detroit and the people, you know, our people here in Chattanooga get more involved with the league and, you know, can kind of help some teams kind of make their way. And, you know, there's one thing that I think a relationship with NPSL, if there is one, and I know that they're talking, I mean, I know that there were high level talks between NISA and NPSL, at least in the summer. So I know they're talking, and, you know, that's another way that if we could get some good examples in NISA, you know, kind of hand-holding those clubs so when they get to NISA, they're ready to do this stuff. And, you know, we couldn't do that now because we had to get to eight. You know, there was, you know, people are asking, you know, what's the deal with the Fury and why were they here? Well, it was a number. I mean, it's a number. You know, this league has provisional sanctioning, and we needed clubs. And so, you know, unfortunately, you know, I kind of hope they don't come back. you know, it's, you know, we needed them for that number. We don't really need that number right now anymore. So, you know, thanks, Philly, for the 8-1 game against Miami. but we don't need zombie fear anymore. So you know, it's a long way to answer. You know, I like to hear myself talk. It's frustrating. I'm worried as hell about Nisa. Nobody has to tell me that. Nobody has to think that they're you know that I'm just had this shine on for Nisa. There are some concerning things about it, and I can only hope that through the next couple of months and through the end of kind of what was technically the end of the 1920 season will allow the league to kind of gain some legs, and when we get back in the fall, that you know that things look a little bit differently.
So the thing that's always kind of amazed me about the breakdown of Nisa. So the most contemporary example that I can, we've talked about it on Twitter, we've seen it discussed at great lengths on different podcasts, but you know, people are comparing the Fury situation to the Lansing situation. So yeah. For any of you out there that don't know, Lansing Ignite were a team that just competed and did extremely well. They finished second in the USL League One table over the course of, I think there was 24 or 30 games in that league. And after one season, they folded and they played at, there's a minor league team in Lansing, minor league baseball team called the Lansing Lugnuts. And that owner became the PLS owner of the Lansing Ignite. They also brought on the Lansing United former NPSL ownership infrastructure. So it's actually very kind of similar to what the Atlanta situation is for NISA, where they kind of adopted the Atlanta SC and former Silverback infrastructure and just created a pro team around that. But they folded after one season. And in comparing that with the Fury, there's a little bit of, you know, oh, look at NISA, look at the Fury. Whereas with the Lansing situation, it's, well, that owner, you know, backed out on a commitment. Now, I don't want to litigate or kind of be judicious in trying to figure out what happened with any of those situations. But what it is an example of, I think, is that in Lansing, you had 10 or 12 teams in League One this year, and one folded after 1 year. You also have several, you know, MLS B or two teams, both the team that finished first and last, the team that won the championship and the team that finished absolutely last in that table were MLS B or two teams. So you've kind of got that weird situation going on over there. Yet in NISA, what you really truly do have is just a collection of independent clubs. And all of these independent clubs have their strengths and weaknesses. If you just kind of look at the Miami FC, Chattanooga, and Detroit situation, you've got kind of proof of concept, proof of philosophy, a track record of success. You know, Miami's doing this super silly, like, quest for nine. They're counting all sorts of weird things as, like, trophies. But, you know, they're doing all right. I think Ricardo Silva isn't going to let that team fold. I don't necessarily know that they're ever going to outdraw Detroit or Chattanooga. I think they're only getting about 1,000 fans, which I don't really understand everything that they have and the money behind them. But they're not going to fold. They've got the money, and obviously they don't mind wasting it if that's what anybody would consider that. Detroit and Chattanooga are doing just fine, and you guys will continue to do fine. But then you also have Oakland, who, you know, kicked a ball for the very first time this year. And by all accounts, even though they actually haven't done very well on the pitch, and it's a pitch that, you know, the Cosmos once owned and Oklahoma City once owned. Anyways, super inside baseball there. But their branding has been amazing. They do a fantastic job of connecting to the community. They, just as much as Chattanooga and Detroit, I really feel like they have figured out, you know, the best comp for them that I actually think is out there would be Forward Madison. It is that, you know, super fun. They put their thumb straight on the pulse of the community, turned a mirror to it, and just allowed the community to see itself on a soccer pitch. Boom. Perfect. But they did it independently. They don't operate their social media, their promos. They don't look like Detroit or Chattanooga or Miami FC. So even staying out west a little bit, you've got San Diego 1904, which, you said it earlier, I don't know exactly what they're doing either. They are an enigma. Their ownership seems super solid. They've got money behind them. They're playing in this cavernous, you know, what used to be the Qualcomm Stadium out there in San Diego where the Chargers play. Apparently, it's something like $50 to $75 just to park there because now the city owns the facility. They're saying they're getting a couple thousand out to games, but if you look at any of the pictures, it doesn't really look like that. It also sounds like they're papering their tickets a little bit to the community or to youth academies around town. USL, I think, is announcing a champion. Well, they've announced the championship team, but I think they're about to announce the branding in the next week or two. That could really become a contentious situation extremely quickly if they don't get their feet underneath them extremely quickly. But if you go back up north just a little bit, the LA Force, I actually am not that worried about them because that owner actually owns a USL team too. Not exactly sure how the Fed feels about that, but if I'm not mistaken, he owns the FC Golden State USL team, and he also owns Golden State FC in NPSL, or maybe I have that switched back. So he's got several teams in that LA area. He knows how to run the teams. He's already got the infrastructure. Not too worried about that. And then Cal Striker United, they have a great owner. They're doing decent with attendance, but I think as they build out their team, I think they're going to be doing all right. That kind of leaves us with Stumptown and Atlanta. I don't know what to say about either one of those. When Atlanta was the Silverbacks, they at the very least had a following. I don't know, I think one of their attendances was announced at like a 175 people, and I don't even really think it was that much. They're playing at a chiropractic school college, and what they actually are playing on is a rugby field. I don't know if that's permanent. I know that the ownership had previously said that they were trying to build a stadium in a strange part of town, and when a local there heard that that was going to be in that part of town, they're a little hesitant to say that they thought that was going to be successful because that's not really a part of town that locals would feel comfortable going to. And then you've got Stumptown, who's owned by Casey Carr, who apparently has been in sports consulting for the vast majority of his adult career, and yet just can't seem to get out of his way with announcements. And he's in a town that already has a lower league team there. It's not quite the same Chattanooga situation, but it's kind of similar. And there's an MLS push. I don't know how he's planning on positioning his team to be successful there. I know the Independents are trying to actually move downtown, and they're kind of vacating the Matthew Sportsplex, which is probably why he tried to directly tie himself to Matthews. The only other club that would play down there would be the Charlotte Eagles. They're a USL League Two team, so you'd kind of be a touch above them. But I mean, you see pictures of their game day experience, and they're selling like Doritos and Fritos that they bought at Sam's Club, for a dollar, and they're selling bottles of water and no alcohol. But at the same time, on the pitch, they played Chattanooga fairly well, and they went down to Miami and drew Miami, and now they're about to play Miami in the championship game. There's an honest to goodness chance that they come out of this showcase with a playoff position for next year if they hold that up as what they're going to do. So unlike USL, which does kind of have this franchise model where I don't necessarily know that there was a lot of difference between the Triumph and Tucson and the Red Wolves, this kind of all of the crests kind of look the same, and the game day experiences I'm sure were kind of the same. And while the fans I'm sure will say, no, the Triumph reflected the community in the Greenville area. And yes, I followed the Triumph because we had a couple former Asheville players on there. And I saw those players at youth camps, and I saw those players in the schools in that area. And I think that's beautiful, and that's awesome. And that's, of course, it's almost like the least that a professional sports team can do in 2019, though. But I don't know, when I watched ESPN Plus to watch the Triumph play, there was nothing that happened during the course of that game that screamed Greenville to me. I don't know what Greenville is as a community and a culture by watching the Triumph. I can watch a Chattanooga FC game, I can watch a Detroit game, and I know exactly what is going on in those communities. I know who's attending those games. I know what they care about. I know, whether it be because of a TIFO or something that's coming up on Twitter, I understand that community through the lens of that supporters group or through the lens of that club. And I actually feel like that's the advantage that NISA has at the present moment. Because if you look at each one of those clubs, and again, Miami FC is kind of hard to figure out, and maybe San Diego's hard to figure out, but I kind of get a feeling of what the LA soccer scene looks like just a touch by watching the Strikers play. Oakland just smacks you in the face with it. Detroit, Chattanooga, you guys are you guys. Atlanta is going to continue to potentially be successful because of Fode's connections to Africa and some of those other talent pools where he pulls his talent from and gives them opportunities here in America. And I know that's a little, you've got to dig beneath the skin of that club to understand that. But once you understand that and once you see what they are truly doing as kind of a talent pipeline, and I know you actually just told me off air that there's going to eventually be a number on internationals, and I don't know how they'll get around that, but that's kind of what they do. And as an incubator for foreign talent, as an incubator for you know, individuals who might not have other opportunities, I think Atlanta's kind of a cool club that does that. Stumptown, I don't know. I don't understand it, you know. But hey, you know, they had 10 games, 14 games, whatever they had, and maybe they'll figure it out in the offseason. But NISA has these built-in advantages. It's not USL, and that's what they have got to focus on. Unlike the NPSL, who we kind of talked about earlier, and I think they've split their attention. Now they're going to have to, you know, they're going to continue to potentially lose the Asheville SCs if they're not careful, if they're so focused on trying to please everybody instead of just doing the best they can with one thing and letting, you know, the next Chattanooga and the next Detroit rise up through the ranks. I think they're at risk of losing clubs. NISA just needs to continue to focus and promote these individual clubs. The league office, and I know it's a decentralized league office and that's part of the gimmick, low barriers of entry, low barriers of exit. Hit your, you know, PLS and you can join. Look at the Michigan Stars. Oh boy. But if they can lose a Fury and potentially, you know, attract a Stars, but also a Cosmos, if they can lose an Atlanta SC, but pick up a Detroit and a Chattanooga, if they do a 2-for-1 almost exchange, every time they lose, they pick up two, and those two that they're picking up are quality, and not everyone's the Michigan Stars. I really, really, truly do believe it's going to be a slow, arduous climb, but I think NISA is going to be successful.
Well, I'm glad you do. because, you know, I probably need to spend a little more time focused on the kind of the next group of MPSL clubs that might see themselves as a Chattanooga or a Detroit. You know, I might need to focus on some League Two teams that seem like that may be close to markets where, you know, they may be stuck. And, you know, because that I don't really know if that exists, because I haven't looked at the maps and the territorial charts and all that kind of stuff. If there are any League Two teams that see themselves as wanting to move, but they're kind of stuck in where they are. So, you know, I'm worried because it's, and this is a little black helicoptery, you know, I know that, but you know, USL was struggling just a matter of years ago, and NASL was around, and MLS went to the two of them and said, "Hey, we want to put our, you know, our little league teams in your leagues. What do you think?" And NASL told them to, you know, forget it. That's not what we want to be. And USL said, "Sure." And I know that there's more to it than this, Tim, but one's still here and one's not. So, you know, USL is being propped up, maybe too strong of a verb to use, but their relationship with MLS is providing them with stability and security that NISA cannot provide right now. And you're right. If we lose a couple of clubs, but gain two or three that, you know, that do things the right way, then, you know, it could be a slow trudge to success. If we could get to 12 teams and kind of maintain 12 for a period of time, then, you know, maybe we'll be okay. And I hope so, because there's, you know, what I see happening, and I can't predict the future, but, you know, MLS has monopolized Division One, and I see USL attempting to do these. Well, they've already done it with Division Two, and they're attempting to do it with Division Three, and they are slowly trying to do it with the quote-unquote Division Four. You know, they will. You know, there was already a story, and I don't know if it was just a player being stupid and not realizing what he was saying in a Spanish a publication. You know, he talked about Oakland wanting to be a USL team, and we know that Oakland talked to USL and whatever. I think there's some territory issues with that. But that those little things come out, and we also know that 1904 talked with USL, and USL said no for whatever reason. You know, that corporate structure, that company will still try to pick off those it sees as vulnerable, and they can pick off. And if they pick off enough, they'll starve out the rest. And, you know, you say, and I've heard a lot of people say, well, Chattanooga and Detroit have it together and they'll be okay. I mean, that's, that's just not the case. NISA is what we've got. And if that doesn't work, we're stuck. And so, you know, I'm incredibly nervous about it, and I've said it out loud. I trust the ownership of CFC and Detroit, but there's a lot outside of their control. And you know, when things happen, like, you know, Asheville is, that's exactly what, in my opinion, you may know differently. You know, that's exactly what happened to Asheville. USL came into the Southeast, and for whatever reason, clubs in Birmingham and in Memphis decided that, you know, the PDL was right for them, and then they moved on to championship or you know, whatever. You know, that, and Nashville did the failing up thing to MLS. You know, and that just stripped the Southeast to the point. And, you know, Chattanooga, you know, you can. People can, I think, get some MPSL people will point to Chattanooga and say, you know, don't lament if MPSL dies, you're part of the reason why. And I totally get that. I totally get that, which is why I would like us to be there as soon as possible. Not because we're some, you know, knight on a white horse, because I think we owe MPSL a lot and we need to be there. But USL, and, you know, USL tried to, is still trying, in my opinion, to pluck off this market, and choked the Southeast to the point where Asheville looked around and said, "God, we got to pull the trigger, or you know, we're not going to have a place to play." And I can't help but think that's got to be their strategy. They're doing it in Michigan right now. You know, I think that league, that conference, when Detroit leaves, is in serious jeopardy. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm not really answering any question that you asked, but I'm glad that there are people who think NISA can be successful. I hope it can be, but I'm really nervous. And right now, you know, it's way too early for anybody to say. We know leagues come and go, and I don't think anybody would be completely shocked if we woke up in the morning and NISA folded. I mean, it's just that's the way that I think I might have to go to the hospital. But you know, that you know, it's just the way of the lower leagues right now. And until somebody, whether it's USSF or somebody, pays attention and decides that something needs to be done, it's going to be this way. But I'm worried about it. And, you know, all I can hope is that, you know, like I said, I've liked what I've seen. I've liked what I've watched from Cal United and from some of the other West Coast teams. Oakland is great. I know Detroit does a good thing. I know we're doing all right. You know, if Atlanta can struggle along and Stumptown figures itself out, you know, the Cosmos will be the Cosmos, and Miami will be Miami. Maybe we'll limp through and get through this. I think for me, fall of 20 is just so important. You know, if it looks like it does now in fall of 20, I'm going to be terrified. So, you know, anyway, you also asked, I don't know if you want to talk about this, people compared the Fury and the Ignite situations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're so different. I think the common thread is, no matter how stable these lower division leagues look, when you have this PLS and when you have, I guess, the climate where leagues are just trying to strip things from one another, this is what you're going to get. I mean, this is what you're going to see, and it's just going to be incredibly chaotic.
Yeah. I again think it's a situation of just diametrically, you know, opposite results. The Fury, obviously, Matt Driver, sorry, Jason, but I mean, he's just a con man. And Jason even put up a thing of how in the sponsorship packet, Driver was talking about a soccer-specific stadium that was supposed to be built by 2022, and it was going to have 8,000 seats, and it was going to have X, Y, and Z. what on earth is this man talking about? Like this yeah. is like just, I mean, made up rainbows and unicorns he's doing to try to sell sponsorships to basically just be able to afford to go down to Miami to lose 8-1 to him. Naipoon is out here, you know, with reports about players not getting paid. There was also a report, they canceled one of the Stumptown games or something and claimed it was because of the hurricane when the weather was like 62 degrees and gorgeous that day. And they said that staff was having a hard time getting to the game. That was just a you know, it was a shit show from the beginning. It was never going to happen. As opposed to Lansing, where it was just a owner who was, you know, you got to lay a little bit of fault at the league right there. And the league probably came in and told them, you know, we expect you to lose this much money the first year, but, you know, you can eventually see profits potentially after X amount of years. So you probably are only going to lose so much money this year if you attract so many fans. They were talking about 4,000 fans a game. They said they were getting 3,000 fans a game. Anybody who watched any of those games clearly saw they were only getting about 2,000 fans a game. And he pulled the plug. So there's a little bit of this, there's a little bit of that. I think each league definitely shares and bears a little bit of the responsibilities of those situations. Just like you said, NISA accepted the Fury for numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, USL potentially sold a little bit of a lemon to Lansing, and that owner just didn't have the patience to take those losses. I feel
I think USL needed numbers,
I feel
too.
Bad
I think that's
Jeremy,
one of the reasons.
But, you know, that's kind of what you signed up for, and you dance with the devil that you brought. So Jim, let me be optimistic enough for the two of us. You do the worrying. And I hope throughout the winter, as anything develops, we'll have you back on. And guys, Jim, can you tell everybody where to find you and the 423 Soccer Podcast?
Sure. You can find my rantings and ravings at Chattagooner. And the podcast is at 423 Soccer Pod. We are should be anywhere. Just go to wherever you find really, really good podcasts like the one you're listening to now, and we should be there too. So just look for the 423 Soccer Pod, and we'll be there talking nonsense from the beautiful scenic city of Chattanooga.
Guys, other than the Amateur Hour podcast, Jim's podcast is literally my favorite lower league soccer podcast out there. So please give them a listen if you get an opportunity. Jim, thank you so much, and we'll chat soon.
All right, thanks.
I guess that's why they call us the Blues. Time on our hands could be time spent with brews. Drinking like tourists, yelling like drunkards.
You've been listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast. Shoot us an email at youresmarterthanus@gmail.com or find us on Twitter @YOURE_smarter.